welcome on this Friday to the show. This is the Friday before the Final Four weekend. So for all you listeners in Atlanta, I hope you're having fun down there. Nice Final Four. We got a real potential for a Big East final, a la 1985. You know that would warm our hearts. Anyway, this is Ray and Tay, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. Thank you for joining us. And like Ray said, it's Final Four. We're hyped up, and we'll talk about a lot. Give us a call, 718-664-9098. You can always email us. We love reading your emails at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Check out our website. We got the baseball standings, NBA standings, poll questions, a lot of photos. You can listen to some of our featured episodes. If you want to hear us talk to Bob Brenly or Peter Vesey or, you know, Ed Odevan from the Japan Times or Ian Bagley, it's all there, Al Troutwig. So check out rayandtaytoday.com. Also tweet at us. We love being interactive. We tweet weekends, you know, daytime, 1 in the morning if you're watching the Diamondbacks for 16 innings, whenever it could be. But tweet at Ray and Tay Today. That's RAEANDTAY Today, and that's at Twitter. Ray,
tweet, tweet.
Let them know how we're rocking.
So we're going to end the show with our Final Four preview, so don't worry. So if we're not talking Final Four, don't worry. We'll get there. We'll get there. So like we usually do, we'll start off with breaking news. We'll tell you what's going on in the world of sports. We have some stuff going on in college basketball that's not related to the Final Four. We've got the women's Final Four. We've got the NIT. So we'll bring you some of that. We'll let you know what's going on in the world of sports. We'll also get into NBA. We're a couple weeks away from the playoffs. Teams have about 6 games to go. So we had a big injury for the Denver Nuggets. And we'll talk a little bit about the West playoff race, the East playoff race. Then we'll start talking baseball. We've had our first series is done, and we've got one team out of 30 is undefeated. So we'll get into that. And then we'll talk Yankees, Mets, Diamondbacks. We'll give you some observations from after the first series. And then, like we said, without further ado, we'll get into our men's Final Four, because I guess it's unfair to say Final Four. The women's have a Final Four. So we'll talk
about
the men's Final Four in Atlanta. So we've got Wichita State, Louisville's the first game. Michigan, Syracuse is the second game. So we'll get into it. But first, let's start off with some breaking news. So, Tay, what's going on in the world of sports?
Well, listen, I want to get this out of the way. Let's talk a little bit about the NFL before we talk about all this coaching stuff that's going on in sports. Well, it looks like the Giants have signed defensive tackle Mike Patterson. He used to play for the Patriots. So that's a pretty strong little move the Giants are trying to build up. We know we talked about the Panthers signing Dominique Hickson. And our boy, Jay-Z, with Roc Nation Sports, has now signed Victor Cruz. So he's jumped in, this is just as I said it the other day, that quickly. He went from Canoe and baseball to Victor Cruz in the NFL. And it's definitely a local flavor. We'll see if he gets like a college player or something like that. You know, that's probably the next step, somebody getting ready to get drafted. But it's kind of interesting. And then Jamarcus Russell. There's actually some teams interested. He's lost a lot of weight. He's still got a cannon of an arm. Coaches always feel that they can work with talent. So it's about 3 or 4 teams that are interested and might bring him in a training camp. So watch out for Jamarcus Russell trying to make a comeback.
Well, you know, as far as Jamarcus is concerned, everybody loves the big arm. So look at a guy like Jeff George. Anybody that has a big arm you can always field calls. So if this guy gets his weight down and shows that he's hungry and he's willing to work, right, he did get that $39 million guaranteed 4 or 5 years ago coming out of LSU. Al Davis, you know, is one of his last moves, gave him the big, you know, the big contract. But you could think to yourself, is he one of the top 64 quarterbacks or maybe 96 quarterbacks in the NFL or on the planet? Yeah, maybe. Certainly has the physical tools. If his mind is right,
definitely.
He should be able to get on to an NFL. He's still a young guy. He's still in his 20s. You know, yeah. So yeah, let's look out for
him. It's the year of the comeback, right? You got Vince Young, you got him. I think the Patriots might give a look to T.O. I don't know if you saw Brady was throwing to T.O., you never know. Maybe Chad Johnson comes back. Yeah, actually, T.O. would be good for the Patriots, I think. It'd be perfect. So it's interesting. You know, there's a lot going on in football. Then we talk about the coaches and college sports and just the whole Rutgers situation. I mean, obviously Mike Rice was let go, and then they negotiated the resignation of the athletic director. I always forget, mispronounce his name, Peretti. So he's done.
Pernetti. AD.
So he's done. But this is what's interesting. You know, if the president didn't see the tapes until recently, why not? And I think maybe, I don't know if the president can survive this because, you know, that's a lack of institutional control. I mean, when your second biggest program after football, Rutgers basketball, you know, in the middle of the season, you suspend a coach and fine him and suspend him for 3 games, and then you don't even want to see the reason why or the tapes. You know, that's a little bizarre. So I don't know if the president of Rutgers will survive this. So stay tuned. We shall see.
Well, there's also been an uproar on campus where professors have signed this petition that they want to get rid of the president. So, yeah, we shall see. It's hard for me to think he'll survive, especially because it's a state university. And so ultimately they have to, you know, they have to answer to the state, you know, board, and then – I mean, it's indirect, but to the state of New Jersey and the politicians and everything. So, you know what? My personal feeling is that the president won't survive this.
Right. You're probably right.
See.
So we'll talk a little basketball hoops, like you were talking about with the injuries. Gallinari for the Denver Nuggets, probably done for the season. He tore, they're saying it's not 100%, but likely tore his ACL in the left knee, and then Ginobili won't be there for the first round of the playoffs with his injury, and Parker's ankle is looking bad again. So we'll talk about the OKC Spurs game, but just, you know, looking at the Spurs, they might not get through the first round against the Rockets. Ugh, that's bad. You hate to hear about the injuries.
Yeah, and especially
really.
Because Tim Duncan is at the end of his career, and so even though he's not the injured guy, he's probably thinking to himself, oh, my God, my compadres are falling. You know, he needs definitely Ginobili and Parker. I mean, they've got some young talent, Kawhi Leonard, and they've got, you know, Danny Green, but ultimately they got to make this last push for Tim Duncan this year or next year, and it's probably that team's going to have to think about, you know, where they go from there. But yeah, injuries, and that's the thing. You know, this is an 82 game season. It's not a 66 game season like last year. So being healthy, and that's why the Heat, they're resting all their guys. Now, they might lose a little bit in continuity, but they probably shouldn't hurt them in the first round, maybe not even the second round. But, you know, you want to be playing, you want to be healthy and playing at the top of your game come mid-April.
Oh, definitely. And then also we've got some of these guys declaring and coming out. I mean, Deshaun Thomas from Ohio State, like you said off air, what more else can he do? He's got to score against the big boys, and I think he can do it. Also, you've got Stephen Adams from Pittsburgh, the young seven-footer declaring for the draft. He's projected to be mid to late first round. So it's interesting. You've got those guys. You have Goodwin from Connecticut, a bunch of other, you know, other underclassmen will declare, I'm sure, from Syracuse and Michigan and these other schools once the Final Four is over and the season is officially over. I think they have to mid-April to decide, or the end of April to decide, but you just worry, you know. I wish all these guys the best, and you just hope that, you know, they succeed and get drafted at the next level, because there's no guarantees, Ray.
Yeah, and if you're a second-round pick, you're not guaranteed money. And so sometimes being a second-round pick can be fortuitous, like when Gilbert Arenas was a second-round pick. He played his 2 years in Golden State, and then he got paid. So it can help, but for the most part, you want to be a first-round pick, because the first round is guaranteed money, and when you get your guaranteed money, nobody can take that from you. And it's a minimum 3 years, and the team has an option for the fourth year. So it's a four-year deal of guaranteed money. So that's where you want to be.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you definitely want to be. And, you know, speaking, I mean, we got some baseball news, but just staying with this and speaking of these young guys and stuff, Did you see the McDonald's All-American game? There were some studs. This year, I got to say, there's some special talent. I mean, we've heard of the Harrison twins. People might not know about Aaron Gordon, who won the MVP with 24-9, and he's going to Arizona. You've got the number one player, Wiggins, Andre Wiggins, who has not decided yet where he wants to go. He's debating Kentucky, who already has six of the top 104
guys
in this game.
That's what was crazy to me.
Right.
That was what's crazy to me, is that Kentucky doesn't even make the NCAA because of the fact that they lost, you know, all that talent from last, you know, six players from last year. And yet Calipari can reload, shrug it off, and they get six guys from the McDonald's All-American game. So what's amazing about him, more than anybody I've ever seen, maybe with the exception of John Wooden, is that he gets guys to come over, and from all in, and from all the indications, he doesn't promise them anything. He just says, look, we're just going to ball, and if you're good enough, you're going to play, and we're going to bring talent around you, so we're going to get the best out of you in practice. You're going to play hard, and you're going to play, you know, in the SEC and on national television. And he gets guys to commit and to play with each other, because usually if a star goes to a school, another star doesn't want to go to that school because he doesn't want to compete. But Calipari somehow gets these kids to come and play with each other.
And he's recruiting from all over the country. That's what's fascinating. I mean, have, you know, this is six guys listed at the top 100. Duke's got a couple guys. They've got the second-best player, Jabari Parker. So that should be interesting. And, you know, they're losing a couple guys, but Duke will reload as well, getting, you know, two of these McDonald's guys. They also got the kid Jones, who's pretty tough. What I thought also was interesting, though, is that the fact that they've got six, but Wiggins is still considering them, and that could be seven, but he's looking at Kentucky, Kansas, Florida State, which both his parents were both athletes and went there. This is Mitchell Wiggins' kid, by the way, who played in the NBA. And he's also looking at North Carolina, Kansas, Florida State. And his mother, I think, was like a track star or something there. So, I mean, the lineage of this kid, I mean, that's why, you know, he is the number one. But I like the Harrison twins. I really like them. I like Aaron. I like you know, they're both 6'4", 6'5".
Brother,
you know, that was nice. That was nice. I mean, you know, this is, I mean, it's nice to see. But also, one thing I noticed about this game, there was no little guards, and I think there's like a little trend. You're starting to get these 6'3", 6'4", 6'5" point guards and / combo guards. It's interesting to see that you don't see like a 5'11" or 6'1" kid, you know, in the McDonald's group. There were some more, you know, taller point guards. And it seems everybody's between 6'8 and 6'6 and 6'9. That was sort of like the average height. Like, these guys are like all, you know, the same. I mean, it's fascinating, you know. It really is fascinating.
Michael Carter-Williams is right now, you know, the two best guards are playing each other probably, or the, you know, the, at least the two, you know, point guards left in the tournament. I guess Peyton Thiebe is a little guard, but, you know, Michael Carter-Williams is that guy. He's going up against Trey Burke, who's a little guard, but Michael Carter-Williams is that 6'4", 6'5", you know, long, lanky point guard, and kind of like the way Cal Ripken revolutionized the position of shortstop, and it allowed for bigger players who usually would never even try to play short. It was, you know, Phil Rizzuto and Pee Wee Reese and Ozzie Smith and you know, all these smaller guys typically played short, and then Cal Ripken came by. So similarly, the point guards, people that have ball skills growing up, are saying, wait a minute, I can play point. You know, at first when Magic came in and was 6'9", people were like, oh, he's the exception. Then Penny Hardaway, he's the exception. But now more and more you start to see these long athletic point guards, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", you know, you're thinking, wow, where do the little guys play? You know, they got to play.
Definitely. You know what I thought was a good story, too? SMU has got a McDonald's All-American, and I thought that was just great. Nobody goes to play at SMU, and, you know, they got a nice kid. Keith Frazier, you know, he's a shooting guard. And I'm like, okay, go ahead, SMU, get up in there. Our Tar Heels had a couple of guys. Arizona had a couple of guys. Florida had a couple of guys. So, anyway, look for that. You know, this is obviously the, you know, there's also the Brand Jordan game coming up. And, you know, it's all fun and it's all exciting. And what was also exciting, or not too exciting, the NIT champions. We must say congrats to those Baylor Bears who smacked down Iowa, who beat my Tar Heels by 11, so you know I'm upset. But congrats to the Baylor Bears, Isaac Austin, Pierre Jackson. What do you think about Baylor being the best team to not make it in the Field of 68?
Well, you know what? They end the season at 23-14, and they have a decent squad. And if this kid, Isaiah Austin, comes back, you know, that's kind of a nice, you know, a nice team. He's going to flirt with the NBA because he's, you know, tall and kind of talented, athletic, 15-9 and 5 blocks in the game. But, you know, Baylor's got to be a little disappointed. It's nice to win it all, but you got to be a little disappointed that you didn't make the Field of 68. But having said that, you know, a title is a title. So they did win.
Yeah, no, they definitely did. And then just, I guess, that before we get into the NBA, the one little baseball note, like you said, it looks like our boy Derek Jeter won't be back to sometime in May, where we thought he might miss a week. It's going to be a little bit longer. And I kind of felt that, see, I mean, Ray, to be honest with you, because ankles are fickle. It takes a long time to heal. I mean, I went through a broken ankle, and by no means am I Derek Jeter. But when you're dealing with ankles, you're talking ligaments, tendons, the bone. It's all got to heal. And to be able to plant and throw, to be able to, you know, go get, you know, to the right or to the left and break,
right,
to do double plays, shortstop is a position where the ankle is so crucial.
I think that's the key.
Yeah.
I think playing middle infield. You know, if he was a DH
or a left fielder
or a first baseman possibly, you might be able to get away with it, but not in the middle infield turning double plays. So you're right. I mean, we hope Jeter comes back, but we want him to be healthy. So Yankees are in trouble. You know, we said it in our baseball preview, but Yankees are in trouble.
Yeah, speaking of trouble, they I think they're down 8-3. So, yeah, the trouble continues. The Tigers have just been bombing out, have hit about 3 homers today, and the Yankees are like, I don't know. So let's talk some hoops, man. We'll get to the baseball. But actually, you know what? I got a little surprise. Somebody wants to chime in to the whole Ray and Tay family before we break into the to what we call our segment of Around the NBA. And let's see what we got here, Ray. We got a little flavor. Where is it at? Oh, okay. Maybe we don't got the flavor. Here we go. So one thing that we pride ourselves in with Ray and Tay today is that, you know, we have all types of, you know, people that listen and fans and friends and stuff. Well, we got some famous people that listen to our show, too. For you that like comedy, check this out.
Yo, this is Pablo Francisco. You know what? When I want the sports, all the best updates, I go to Ray and Tay. That's right. All sports. All good. Yeah.
Shout out to Pablo.
Great stand-up comedian. He's actually from, I think, the Tucson area, travels the world doing comedy. You can, you know, see all his stuff on YouTube. He's been on Comedy Central, just everywhere. Pablo Francisco listens to Ray and Tay today. You got to like that, man.
Love it. I love it.
So
let's give him some good sports talk.
Yeah, let's give it to him. Let's hoop it up. I think, to me, we spoke about the injuries with Denver and the Spurs, but I think OKC, they've got the tiebreaker. I think they're going to get the number one seed, and last night they kind of put it on the Spurs. Are you thinking that clearly now OKC looks like they're going to come out of the West without being unscathed? Clippers don't look impressive. The only team is maybe the Memphis Grizzlies.
Well, I wouldn't write the Spurs off that easily, but because both teams won their home game, so it's 2-2. The problem for the Spurs is that the formula that they have doesn't work against the Oklahoma City Thunder, because first of all, they're younger and they're more athletic, and the other thing that mentally they can't break them down. because of what happened last year. The fact that they were down in game three and came back and then won four in a row. So San Antonio was up in each of those games and had a chance to win, you know, pretty much every game in that series. But the problem was San Antonio has to play 48 minutes, and they're just too old to be effective against this young thoroughbred OKC team in a seven-game series. I don't know that they can lead for enough minutes in that series to win four games. So the Thunder, look, they'll play them hard, and they might go 4-2 or they might go 4-3, but I feel like it's almost like a Milwaukee Bucks situation of the 90s where – the Bucks just couldn't beat the Sixers and the Celtics. They just couldn't.
80s.
They had
the
talent. What did I say? The 80s, right?
Yeah.
So
80s.
They just couldn't beat them. They just couldn't. They couldn't get over them. And I think that's their worst nightmare. So San Antonio wants to get to the finals. I fear that they can't beat Oklahoma City. So they're going to have somebody else knock off Oklahoma City if San Antonio reaches the finals. And like we said, they're in trouble with these injuries because losing Ginobili, potentially having Parker at 80-90%, it's tough. It's
tough, especially
what I was
going to say.
Out of that first round.
I totally agree with what you said about last year's playoffs, but I think this is a whole different scenario in a sense that if this Pacer team was Pacers, if the Spurs were 100% healthy, I think OKC is not as good without Harden and not having the ball handler. Durant's been having a lot of turnovers. I think that the Spurs, the OKC could be ripe and Spurs could take them, but there's no way without Ginobili, and Parker is not himself. He only scored 4 points last night, couldn't even play the whole game. He couldn't break anybody down and get to the hole. He's not the same player. So clearly the Spurs are primed to get upset by the Houston Rockets in the first round and that seven seed who can attack. And when they don't have Ginobili, who's going to stop Harden? With Lynn and the other guards, they can attack Parker. That team is just so multifaceted. Ashik and all the boys, the Houston Rockets are going to be tough for the Spurs. And I'll be shocked. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if the Rockets wind up upsetting the Spurs.
I'd be shocked. I don't think so. I think with them losing to the Grizzlies 2 years ago as an 8 seed, when the Grizzlies took them down, I don't think that Popovich would let them sleep on the Rockets. And I think that ultimately execution in the fourth quarter, if you can stop Harden, then the other guys have a harder time creating their own shots. And so Parsons and Lynn and Ashik and, you know, all these guys, I like San Antonio 4-1 maybe in that series. So I'm not really worried about the Rockets if I'm San Antonio.
4-1. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
but I
we
like,
shall see, Playboy.
We shall.
We shall see. Now, how about these Lakers? The Lakers, they have a big game tonight at home against Memphis. The Jazz are hosting New Orleans. The Lakers are right now a half a game up on the Utah Jazz. Two big games tonight. So maybe the Lakers, they can extend their lead if New Orleans can, you know, shock Utah. And the Lakers got to play Memphis. That's, you know, that's a big game. At 39 and 36. Let's see what Howard and Kobe, and maybe some people are actually saying there's rumors out there that they actually play a little bit better when Nash is out of the lineup. I don't know what you think about that.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it'd be one thing if they had a, you know, who do they have backing him up? I mean, your boy Steve Blake and Kobe.
Blake plays well, but Kobe plays a lot more point.
Kobe does, yeah. I just think that in the playoffs, when it's a half-court game, you have to protect the basketball, you have to get people the ball where they're comfortable shooting, and you have to have finishers. Now, your boy has not been historically, Steve Nash has not been historically a finisher, but with all the attention on Kobe, you know, they had that stretch of 10 or 15 games where Kobe was playing really the point and Steve Nash was playing the off guard. So I think that even though he's a defensive liability, I think ultimately you're better off with Steve Nash. I can't believe this team is in the playoffs when it comes down to, like I said, execution. It's different if you play, I don't know, if you play a guard that can really take advantage of you and then you bring a defensive guard off the bench. But Steve Blake isn't a defensive guard, right? Steve Blake is like the poor man's version of Steve Nash. I mean, totally different games. But you know what I'm saying? It's not like their games are totally complementary where you can even go offense, defense, substitution. So they're better off with Nash. They just need to, get into a grind-out game in the playoffs and hope that Kobe and Dwight Howard present enough of a mismatch that they can slow the game down and beat teams, you know, coming down to the last possession where they have the Black Mamba and the other team doesn't.
Well, the Lakers are probably going to play OKC, and I think
right.
that's the worst matchup for them. I think they could beat the Spurs. I don't think they can beat OKC.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I mean, to beat OKC, Howard's got to be like 26 and 11, and Kobe has got to be like, you know, 26 or 28 and like 6 or 7. So they're going to have
to
play
exceptional.
You know,
that's not far off their career averages, though. So, you know,
no, definitely,
saying...
but it's, you know, they haven't been doing that this year, not consistently. You know, and I'm saying 6 assists, Kobe's going to have to really step it up. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. Obviously, in the East, the Knicks tonight go for 11 straight at the Garden at home. They've got the 2 seed, sort of, they're in the driver's seat, you know? I mean, they're up a half a game. OKC plays, I think they played, yeah, they're going to play the Pacers tonight, so that, hopefully they're not too tired. But, you know, the Knicks look like they're going to get that 2 seed, man. I mean, it could go back and forth, but right now, they could play Celtics in the first round or the Hawks, and either way, you got to pick the Knicks to move forward.
Yeah, you got to like the Knicks coming out of the first round, which for Carmelo would be the first time as a Knick and only
yeah.
the second time in his career.
Ever.
So the guy always makes the playoffs, he just can't get out of the first round. So it'd be really nice for Carmelo to do that both for him and for the Knicks. But
and
know,
he's the hottest person on the planet right now, too. Dropping 50
yeah.
and 40 back-to-back. Let's give him his love. 90 points in 2 games. My man, Mamello. I mean, whew, incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that ultimately, you know, the Chicago Bulls are one of those teams that you really don't want to see in the playoffs. You know, Derrick Rose might make a cameo, but maybe not. But even without him, they play defense. And they have a little bit of size. And, you know, Boozer, Dang, and Noah present a decent front court, which in the Eastern Conference, you know, having a 3-4-5 like that, combined with the defense that they play, they're a tough, tough team. I don't know that you want to see them. So right now,
you know who doesn't want to see them? The team that they beat last night on TNT, the Brooklyn Nets. That's the 4-5 matchup. They took it to them and won in Brooklyn.
Sure is. Atlanta has an outside chance of catching them, but they're one back in the loss column. But, yeah, if Brooklyn-Chicago, you know, I'm thinking Brooklyn is thinking, oh, God, we got to deal with these guys. These guys are tough to face.
This is your Brooklyn team. Can they get out of the first round? Your pick?
My pick. I had them as being the second or third best team in the conference, and now they're 4, and they might lose. Yeah, we'll have to see who's healthy. We'll make our predictions next week when the season's over and we have the matchup set. But yeah, at the end of next week or earlier, the following, just before the playoffs. So yeah, we'll do that. I'll keep that to myself for now.
Well, you know what? One thing that was good. It was good to see, not last night, but the night before when the Nets had played, that Brooks had 27 points starting at the two guard for them. And I think he needs to play more. Now, Joe Johnson was banged up, and he's coming back now. But I thought that was interesting for them. And then also, now that Wallace and Joe Johnson are back, and didn't play so well last night, but they're readjusting and getting back in the lineup. But also, one thing that looked good, D. Williams. Did you see when he got up and tried to bing it? I think it was he trying to dunk it on Boozer, his ex teammate at Utah. He tried to bing it on him, and I was like, go ahead, D. Will. I haven't seen D. Will get up like that in a long time. So I thought that was kind of encouraging.
Yeah, just to see the fire and the energy, you know.
Yeah,
I like
definitely.
That.
Yeah.
I like that. Especially,
you know,
like
someone
you
who's
said.
Had a hurt ankle all season. You know, you definitely want to see that in someone that, you know, said he had to lose some weight and stuff. So it looks like D-Will might be ready for the playoffs. Might be ready.
Especially, like you said, that's a team that they might match up with in the first round.
What's going on in Clipperland? Before we leave the NBA talk, man, I want to ask you. There's all this stuff, talk about Chris Paul, and he's too much like Kobe, and other players don't like him. Well, guess what? Toughen up. Because Chris Paul is the only shot you got at advancing and moving in the first, second round, or anything. So DeAndre Jordan has got to play better. Blake Griffin has got to be more of a more post-up moves, got to work on his game more. And everybody else, they need to just shut up and listen to whatever Chris Paul says, man.
Not only that, but Chris Paul could take the 1-1 train, meaning left foot, right foot, and walk right out of Clipperland.
Yeah.
So not only do you need him today, tomorrow, and in 2 weeks when the playoffs start, but you need to sign him. Because if he goes, you know,
you're
we
done.
Might revert back to Clipperland of, you know, a few years ago. Not the terrible Clippers of Elgin Baylor's era, where they kept drafting and you know, Oliwa Candy and Danny Manning and Corey McGetty and, you know, all these guys. And, you know, they never really could settle on a star. Because with all due respect to Blake Griffin, and he's very athletic and he's fun to watch and he's, you know, a great talent for the NBA.
Yeah, Lob City and all that.
If Blake Griffin is your best player, you're not winning a championship. So
Blake
Griffin needs that complementary star and that complementary point guard to get him the ball, and you have both in Chris Paul. So I don't know what it is, and I don't know if it's up to, you know, Vinny Del Negro or who needs to make the peace over there. But like you said, just shut up. Just, you know, play ball. Let's go win some games. You are on the precipice of being the second best team in the Western Conference, maybe in the NBA. And then the Heat got healthy and started winning, you know, all of their games, 27 in a row. And then even in the Western Conference, right, you fell behind the Lakers and the Spurs and OKC. And so you're looking like the Clippers that we, you know, Denver overtook you, and, you know, Memphis overtook you by record. So this Clipper team now is falling back to, you know, middle of the pack in the Western Conference. And you got to say to yourself, this is your chance to take over L.A., you know, to be the team that goes to the Western Conference Finals. So get it together, folks. Get it together.
Definitely. Well, before we get into MLB baseball, let's give a little prediction on the women's Final Four. I mean, obviously, first, we're rocking with Cal versus Louisville. So you got Big East against the Pac-12, which is kind of interesting, especially with Louisville, the men and women making the Final Four, and Louisville had the shocking upset and played great defense against Baylor and Brittany Griner. And then, fourth time is the charm, Ray, Notre Dame against UConn, another Big East matchup. So that's even more impressive, right? The women have three Big East teams in the Final Four. And Notre Dame and UConn could be, like you said, off air, the championship game. But this is the fourth time they've met, and Notre Dame has beaten them three times this year, including once in a Big East title game. What are your thoughts? What are you thinking with the women on Sunday?
Start with the Big East game. I don't know that I've ever seen a team win four in a row against the same team in the same season. So, you know, I can only think in 85, St. John's and Georgetown. St. John's won the first one, and then Georgetown won the next three. So, and they won, obviously, in the semis, and then Georgetown went on to lose to Villanova in the finals. But I don't remember a team playing four times. So a team from the conference playing each other twice during the season, once in the conference tournament and once in the NCAA tournament. I just think to beat a team four times in one season, the last game Connecticut should have won. Notre Dame actually stole that game. So really, you might think of this as 2-1, right, in the Big East, you know, in the Big East Conference championship. So I'm going to go with the slight upset, even though Notre Dame is, you know, 35-1 and a one seed. Connecticut's 35-4. I'm just going to say, look, the law of averages are that Geno Auriemma is going to pull that team around, and Connecticut's going to beat Skylar Diggins and that Notre Dame team.
Well,
so,
for me, okay, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Well, what do you think about that?
No, I totally agree with what you're saying. I just think Skylar Diggins and her and the coach of Notre Dame, I think they're a little hungrier than UConn. I think Notre Dame, I mean, I think UConn has won it. I think that they've, you know, been to the dance and been to the party so often. I think Skylar Diggins, as a senior, she's like, I'm winning it no matter what for my coach. And I really think Notre Dame, I think that they've got good guard play, and I think that they're going to be able to pull it out. So I got to go with the Lady Fighting Irish.
Okay. All right. So in the other game, even though Louisville is riding high off the Baylor upset off of their compadre Ware, you know, his recovery, his surgery and recovery, and he's going to Atlanta, and the Louisville men's team will play on Saturday and maybe even win. So there'll be a lot of momentum. But I gotta go with Cal. I think Cal is just a better team. I think they're 17-1. They only lost once in the Pac-12. 32-3 overall. They're a 2 seed. I like the Cal, the Lady Bears. So I look for a Connecticut Cal final.
I gotta agree with you there. I think the Lady Bears are tough. I think Louisville, that was a great game, but I just don't know if they can match that intensity that they put up against Brittany and the Baylor Bears, and this time they lose to the Cal Bears. So you can't beat a bear twice in a row, okay? So I'm going to go Notre Dame and the Cal Bears. So and the championship is Tuesday, so we'll be able to talk to them about it on Monday's show. So let's get into some baseball before we get to our men's Final Four preview. I mean, real quick, it's, you know, early in the season. It's an exciting time, you know. Bob Brenly was on our preview show, so everybody can go to rayandtaytoday.com and check that out. Listen to Brenly's picks, our picks, and just enjoy it, you know. But one thing that you got to love, spring is in the air and baseball is here. It's exciting, you know, for us, the Yankee fans. I don't know. We're looking like we're going to start 1-3, you know.
We lost.
But
lost
to the Tigers. So 1-3, but hey, Pettit got us the win yesterday. Rivera got us the save. We beat the Red Sox. We didn't get swept by them. So that was fun. That was fun for Yankee fans.
So like we said in the open, though, I think ultimately Yankees are a fourth or a fifth place team. I really don't think that they can – their margin for error is so small that if the pitching doesn't deliver big, that the Yankees are going to lose. So I really think that they're fourth or fifth in the AL East.
Did you see Youkilis's home run today, though?
He did. He had a home run today. I was about to say that.
I was like,
Youk! That's good news.
Definitely.
But here's the thing. There's one team out of 30 that's undefeated. And it's the Washington Nationals. That team has a chance to win.
The creme de la creme. Yeah.
I mean, they're the best. If they can keep healthy and if their young guys continue to improve and they've got the two best young players in the game, you know, Mike Trout too, but Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg, and then combine that with the depth in their rotation. I mean, Gio Gonzalez is the number one on any other team. And then they have enough offense and timely hitting, and they've got a middle reliever, and then they got, you know, bullpen, you know, and a closer. That team is tough. I like that.
Zimmerman, third base, yeah, they're loaded. I love that team, and you know, hey, I mean, I got the Reds beating them or whatever, but I definitely think the Reds, Nats, and Dodgers, you know, should shine in the NL, and should sort of be those teams that you're going to have to watch for. But so far, you know, I like to see teams like, you know, like I said, I think the A's will do well. Bob likes the A's and Blue Jays as well. I think the Mariners should be exciting. Look at the Cubs. The Cubs have started off 2-1, and God knows that they've had a rough way to go in the beginning of all seasons, right, of late. The last couple of years, the Cubs have just been the bottom dwellers.
I think they're in good hands. I think that, you know, Epstein coming over from Boston was a great move for them. And he's got a five-year plan, and he's getting rid of some of those big salaries, bringing in some young talent, using his sabermetrics and all of his statistics that now everybody in baseball uses, but he seems to use it very well. Plus, you've got the Ricketts family spending some money on the, you know, on the stadium and on the team. So I would think if you're a Cubby fan, you know, you wait a year or two.
Oh, the future's bright.
Fine. Yeah.
Hey, and you know what's the proof?
Build a team around him.
And you know what's the proof about what you just said? Look at the young Red Sox with Middlebrooks at third and Jackie Bradley Jr.
Yeah.
over there in left field. I mean, that team is going to be nasty, and the Red Sox are rebuilding, and they did it from the farm and their draft picks. And even, you know, when they got Dustin Pedroia, he wasn't he was like a late-round pick. That's when they were drafting like 28 and 29. So, yeah, the Cubs should be in a good place where, you know, they could get it going and start winning again. So you're right about that. What do you think about the Cleveland Indians? I mean, a team like that, they're starting off 2-1, and, you know, they look refreshed.
The Francona's boys.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, I like Terry Francona. You got to like Francona. I think he's a great – he's a player's manager, but he's a manager. Like, he's a baseball guy.
The thing with me is they've got, again, another team with young talent. So you start with Santana, their catcher, and then they've got, you know, Jason Kipnis at second, and Asdrubal Cabrera. So up the middle, they're pretty strong. The outfield is a little questionable because they've got, you know, Michael Bourne in center field, and they got Brantley and Stubbs. So if those two guys deliver, and then you get something out of Nick Swisher. Now, the question is Nick Swisher going to be the Nick Swisher of, you know, 3-4 years ago when he was a White Sox, or is he going to be the Nick Swisher of the Yankees where he was surrounded with all this talent? Can Nick Swisher deliver when he's not hitting in front of Teixeira and A-Rod and Cano and all these guys? So Swisher needs to earn his money over there in Cleveland, and we'll see if he can. But, yeah, you know, young, fun team to watch. I don't know that they'll be as – on them this year as you are, but we'll see. I mean, they got some young talent.
Well, speaking of young talent, three teams
pitching's
that are all 2-1, how about Baltimore, the Braves, and our New York Metropolitans, the Mets? Those are three exciting teams.
The Mets with some offense. Where did that come from?
He's on my fantasy team. You got to like Ike. Buck. You got to like Davis, Tejada. They're nice.
Well, speaking of Davis, you got to like the Davis in Baltimore with his home runs and his RBIs. I mean, these guys, look,
Davis,
the Baltimore are always, you know, feel like they're second citizens to the Yankees and the Red Sox. Now, I think the Yankees and the Red Sox moved to the bottom, and now the Baltimore Orioles are thinking, we're in such a tough division that finally the Yankees and the Red Sox are not going to be as good as they've been historically over the last 10 years, but here comes the Blue Jays and the Rays. So it's like we're stuck in that third place, and you know, and I predict them to finish third.
Buck Showalter he'll get the best out of them like he did last year. They might not have all those walk-off hits and home runs like they did last year to, you know, pull them through. But just like Bob Brunley said on our show Wednesday, Buck, you know, he was there in the booth when Buck built up the team and did everything for Arizona, and we, you know, we remember because he had left the Yankees and went and built up Arizona. Well, you know, Bob came down, got the World Series, and then, you know, same thing with Torrey. He built up the Yankees, and then Torrey comes in and gets
Ron
the World
Washington.
Series.
And Ron Washington.
There
said
you
it
go.
Our, well,
exactly.
When
so wherever Buck has gone.
Right. You
want to
be the guy after the guy. You want to be the guy
after
Buck.
But this time, Buck is going to get to finish it. I think Buck will get to finish it, and it might not be this year. But I'll tell you, another free agent signing, another pitcher – a year or two, the Orioles are going to be playing in the World Series. I truly believe it.
Really?
Okay,
Machado's a young stud. Weathers is a young stud. And if Chris Davis can
nice
hit
pitchers.
Like this, yeah, Jones, McLouth, and Markakis in the outfield, you know, they've got talent. And the problem is they're in that brutal AL East.
Yeah.
So you can come out of the AL East.
It's such a rough division. I mean, it's just it's brutal. You're not lying. So, well, listen, I mean, it's that time. We've got to break it down. The Final Four. When we talk about brackets,
talk
man,
about it.
Brackets have been kind of a rough way to go. I still got my guy alive, my one team. I've lost Ohio State and Florida and Indiana. You lost your champ, Indiana, but I got Louisville. I got
You know what? I'm liberated. My picks are pure. Because
oh, no, you're just having fun.
Stressed.
You're on the sofa. You're on the sofa. You got your, you know, you got your feet up. You know, maybe a little, maybe we'll give you like a dark beer. You're chilling. And you're comfy. Me?
I can honestly say that this might be the first year that I remember ever not having any Final Four teams. I don't have anybody because I had Duke beating Louisville.
Well, yeah. Yeah,
and nobody
right,
had
right.
nobody had Wichita State. Some people may have had Syracuse, and some people may have had Michigan. But typically, you don't pick four seeds to go. But these are four seeds, especially Michigan. Michigan was a team that should have been a one seed or a two seed most of the year. So for you know all but
and
one
Syracuse
or two
is
weeks.
Better than a four,
right.
talent wise.
Right. So those two are conceivable, but but nobody had Wichita State, and, you know, Louisville, I picked Duke over Louisville. So like I said, my picks are pure. I don't have allegiance to my bracket. I lost.
Well, listen, you want to hear something funny,
terrible.
Though. Wait, so for my bracket, I got Louisville. But for one of my brackets in a money league, 150 guys, nobody picked Syracuse to win but your boy Tay. So
really?
Right now, if this is what I need. If Wichita wins and Syracuse wins and Syracuse wins at all, I'm the champ.
Wait,
out of
so
150
what happens
guys.
If it's Syracuse-Louisville, though, and Syracuse
if
wins?
If it's Syracuse-Louisville, it's going to be close. If Syracuse wins and they beat Louisville, we have to see how the stuff calculates. It might be that I wind up getting, like, second place.
It depends on how the points are because, some teams weigh that final game so much higher than all the other previous rounds, and some of them it's close.
Right. So I just haven't seen all the permutations and all that, but it'll be close. But either way, the top three get prizes. But, I mean, first place, you know, gets a nice chunk of a coin, baby.
There you go.
So, I'm torn.
On Tay. Tay's going to run a Buffalo Wild Wings promotion for all the Ray and Tay listeners if he wins.
So let's get into it, man. Let's break down the first game first. Wichita State, the Shockers, against the Louisville Cardinals, the strong, only remaining overall number one. Ray, take us away. What are your thoughts?
So my instinct says Louisville's going to blow them out, right? But now let's break it down. So if they played 10 times, Louisville would probably win 8-2. So let's try and figure out, is there a way that Wichita State can win? And is there a way that what can Wichita do to stay in the game and win? The good thing about Louisville, if you're the opponent, is that Louisville for stretches, even though they have upperclassmen in the backcourt, they can be erratic. So as much as Siva and Smith are great players, they lose wear, so they lose depth in the backcourt, and their backcourt can be a little inconsistent. And also, you know, what's interesting is this old adage of teams that pressure don't like to be pressured. So in some ways, you know, it's flirting with disaster because you might get blown out of the arena. But if you can rattle their guards a little bit, and I'm not saying rattle them. Look, they've been through the Big East. They've been through the wars. But they still can be inconsistent. You know, there were games where Peyton Siva played terribly, and there was games where Smith played terribly, and then he comes back and scores 31, right? So I just think
that's
the
not going to happen on Saturday.
The
though.
Key is the guards. but the key is the guards. So the key is to sort of rattle the Louisville guards. Ultimately, I think that Hall and Early and Armstead, they really need to play the game of their lives. And your boy Baker, the shot maker, is going to have to make some shots because ultimately.
Don't forget about my boy Wilson.
It comes down to turnovers and threes. I think Wichita State's three-point shooters are really going to have to make a whole lot of their shots, and they're going to have to turn Louisville over, and Louisville's going to have to miss a lot of threes on their end. And that's the only way I see this game, even being close. So
you got a score for me?
Ultimately, I predict Louisville. I predict Louisville
winning. You got a
score
for me?
Yeah, I predict Louisville winning 81-70.
Woo! Okay. Well, for me, I got to tell you, I think Wichita State is one heck of a team. And they are that one team that from, the honorable mention that I had said would make it to the Final Four, they did it. I love the coach. I love Marshall. I love Early. I love Armstead. I think Wilson has been, up and down. But when he's up, he's, been one of their best players. And I love Ron Baker, the three-point maker. But I think what you're saying is right. I mean, they're going to be tested because Louisville on the boards is so much. But Wichita State, they're not huge, but they've got some, decent size, and their guys are pretty aggressive. So I think it's going to be a little bit closer than people would imagine. I could even see at the half Wichita State being up. But at the end of the day, when you lose one of your warriors, and you're such a close team, and the emotion and the coach, and you're going down to Atlanta where, he's been living since he was 14. I'm going to tell you, there's no way Louisville loses this game. And now the refs can be an issue, but I guarantee that Siva and Smith will play enough under control because they know what's at stake. And I just think Bohannon and Dang and, you know, I mean, everybody's like, Gorgie. I think that Louisville's too much. And I think when they start scoring in spurts, they'll wind up winning.
Watch out. What's
77 to 70.
Okay.
A little bit closer than you, but 77 to 70, I got Louisville making it to the finals. Now, game two.
Oh,
what are you thinking? Big East against the Big Ten, baby.
Wow, it's a contrast styles. And
two
here,
number four seeds.
And here, to me, the final score dictates who's going to win. Obviously, the final score dictates who wins. But the point is, if this game is in the 60s, I think that Syracuse wins. If this game's in the 70s and 80s, I think that Michigan wins. That means that Michigan found a way to score against this Syracuse zone. Now, Michigan has totally different point guard, right? They got probably the player of the year in terms of he won the Naismith Award. He might win the Wooden Award. He might win all the awards. It's Trey Burke. But he's a small guard. And so he's never seen a zone like this with the
length
of this zone and Carter Williams and Fair and Sutherland and Trish. So he's got a lot of work to do. And it comes down to, will Trey Burke be able to penetrate and create shots? And then will his shooters, so Hardaway, Robinson, Stauskas, be able to – because I'm assuming that inside, you know, Keita and McGarry might have a little bit of an advantage, but he's still a freshman. So I think ultimately it comes down to, will Trey Burke be able to create enough shots for his shooters, and will they be able to shoot over the top of the zone and not get frustrated and score? And like I said, the higher the score, the better chances for Michigan. So,
come on,
having
give me
said
a score.
All of that, having said all of that, I actually think that the Syracuse zone is going to frustrate Michigan. I think that the Syracuse length is something that Michigan hasn't seen. I think that Stauskas is a freshman. And, I mean, I don't think. Stauskas is a freshman. And Hardaway and Robinson are, you know, young players as well. So you've got a situation where these guys, and Burke himself is only a sophomore. So you've got a situation where these are young guys playing against the zone. They might get frustrated if they get off to a slow start. And they had an easy, relatively easy win against Florida, right? They got off and they weren't tested. They were tested the round before. You know, they had some tough matchups, but the last game they played was pretty easy. So Beilein has coached against this zone, but has never beaten this zone when he was at West Virginia. So I think Syracuse wins the game. I think Syracuse keeps it relatively tight in terms of scoring, and I think they win a tight game. I'll call it 69-66.
Wow. Well, I'm going to break it down like this. I think Michigan definitely needs to get the tempo going. I think that the way to attack a zone is penetrate and kick out, or penetrate and you know, try to get those free throw and you know, in the key shots. I think Burke has got the ability to attack it. I just don't know if they'll be ready, you know, for Stauskas and Hardaway and Robinson to, you know, get the spacing to be able to get open threes like they did against Florida to attack this zone and to attack Syracuse. I think McGarry is going to need to have one of those double-double games. I think he'll play well.
He's been great so far, yeah. He's averaging 17.5
he's
and 11.5 rebounds.
And that's what I'm expecting. I think he needs 19 and 12. I think that Michigan is going to push and push and push. But my thing is, Syracuse, they've got a guy called Trish. They've got Michael Carter-Williams. They've got Sutherland. I mean, this team is so long, so not, you know, not as fast as Michigan, but athletic, versatile. And I just think that Michael Carter-Williams will be under enough control. And I think him and Burke going head-to-head, I think this is going to be his time to sort of shine and be like, you know what? I'm a good player. I'm a big stud like Burke, and I am going to lead my team to victory, and I will be a first-round draft pick just like Burke. And I think that's what's sort of beating in his heart. And to me, Boeheim is just, he's too much. He hasn't lost when he's gotten to this point. He always makes it to the championship game. So this is something that, you know, I think you've got to respect with Syracuse and just the coach. And I think the Orange Men are going to find a way to win a game that might even be a little bit more high scoring. I think even though with their zone, I think that their defense could break down, but I think that they can score a little bit. And I think that Michigan doesn't have the size to stop them. I think Syracuse gets on the glass and is able to get in there and do what they need to do. And I think Sutherland has a big game. To me, I think Sutherland and Trish, I don't know if Robinson and Hardaway are ready for those guards, man, and the veteranship that, you know, that the Syracuse provides. That's going to be one heck of a battle. But at the end of the day, Trey Burke, he's going to ball out. But Syracuse wins, and I've got Syracuse and Louisville in the championship. And my final score, Syracuse 73, Michigan 70. I think
okay.
It's oh so very close.
So we're pretty similar in our picks. And when and to the listeners, we didn't talk about this before, so this is strictly, you know, there was no collusion here.
No. I really think that at the end of the day, it's the Big East. Only thing I got to tell you, except for that one bracket where I picked Syracuse winning it and I got a chance, I'm a little frustrated at myself because I remember calling you and telling you, and I'm watching the Big East Championship, and I said to myself, look at the way Syracuse is playing. They were just playing so incredible, and to me it was almost like a Connecticut thing with Kemba, and I said, you know what, this team could go to the Final Four and win it all the way that they're playing. And I only picked it once, so I should have picked it some more because I went against my instincts, but, you know, sometimes it's hard to, you know, imagine how they're going to continue to play like that. Well, you know what? The talent has risen. You know, the cream rises to the top, and it's risen. I think Syracuse is going to be one heck of a team that's going to be tough. So, Syracuse-Louisville, baby.
All right. Well,
I'm excited. So let them know. We're back Monday.
Regular time. We're hoping to get a guest for you. We got to confirm that, but we're hoping to get a guest maybe down from Atlanta, a college basketball guy, you know, somebody that's close to home, literally. we'll let you know if that all materializes. So we had a great week. You know, we had Bob Brenly on with us talking Major League Baseball. How fun was that to talk to? You know, we said he serves us so many different things. He is a Major League Baseball player. He's a Major League Baseball and World Series winning announcer, and he's a manager, and he's a Major League announcer for several teams in several cities. So he really.
Remember, he used to do Fox. He's done Fox, TBS, the Cubs, and now the Diamondbacks.
And just an all around nice guy. And so we've got our preview. You know, we're previewing the Final Four. We'll come back on Monday and preview the final game.
Tuesday we will review. We'll have a special show Tuesday at 5 o'clock Eastern. Ray and Tay will be back to sum up the championship. So check us out Monday and Tuesday, man. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we had a great time. Thanks for spending time with us. Remember, it's interactive, so we have some emails backing up, so it's our bad. We need to get to those. But
keep sending those
emails in and keep tweeting at us, and follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, you know, tweet at us, let us know that you're listening to the show, that you're enjoying the show, and if you have any questions, let us know. Go to our website, check out our segments, and again, this is an interactive show, so if you've got topics, if you've got rants on your mind, if you got players you want to talk about, coaches you want to talk about, team sports, let's go, bring it on.
Yeah, and let's go Knicks. Knicks go for 11 tonight, man. We'll have to talk to Ian Bagley about them Knicks and Anthony Donahue, man, all of our friends to the show, the Knick guys. So playoffs are coming. Let's go Knicks, 11 in a row, the hottest team in the league.
I love it. All right.
See
you on Monday.
Thanks for talking sports with friends. Big East.
Woo!